From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Henry Anth.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. It's Wednesday, September 7th. Here are today's headlines.
Several white residents of a Burlington nursing home repeatedly used racist epithets against at least six black nurses and nursing assistants, according to a lawsuit filed yesterday by a federal organization. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission alleges that residents of Elderwood at Burlington regularly used racist slurs against the nurses and in some cases made, quote, violent physical contact. The suit also states that management of Elderwood took no actions to improve working conditions for black employees, aside from an unsuccessful attempt to move one resident to another nursing home. The harassment of black nursing staff at Elderwood was first reported by 7 Days in the fall of 2020. The commission is seeking financial compensation for the nurses. It also wants Elderwood to reform its workplace policies and practices.
It's time to get boosted yet again. Starting today, Omicron-specific COVID-19 boosters are available in Vermont. The boosters are for anyone who's already had all their shots, and they're specifically designed to target highly transmissible Omicron subvariants. Speaking on Vermont Edition, Dartmouth College public health researcher Ann Sawson recommended everyone get boosted.
Even if you personally don't think you're at high risk of severe illness or death, there's a real advantage in getting that booster right now, both from your individual and community perspective.
The shots are available at walk-in clinics around the state. They'll also be available through pharmacies and doctor's offices in the coming weeks. More information is available on the health department's website.
Yesterday, we heard about all of the settlement money Vermont is receiving from opioid companies. Well, another day, another settlement, this time with a company accused of marketing and selling e-cigarettes to young people. The state is in line to receive about $8 million over several years from the vaping company Juul Labs. The money is part of a massive $438 million settlement between the company and 34 states. In a statement, Attorney General Suzanne Young said Juul, quote, led the charge in reversing decades of progress in fighting nicotine addiction. According to Young's office, a multi-state investigation revealed that Juul aggressively marketed its products to people who were not legally old enough to use them. The settlement also restricts where and how Juul can advertise its products, limits what flavors Juul can sell, and restricts where and how the company's products can be displayed and sold in stores.
And finally, some college/housing news. The University of Vermont plans to build more housing for its graduate students and staff. The school will partner with a local development firm to build roughly 300 new apartments in South Burlington City Center over the next 4 years, according to a press release. UVM will invest nearly $22 million in the venture. The university expects to recoup the payment in a decade. The first round of units is scheduled to be complete by summer 2024. University leaders say they're also exploring other options to house more undergraduate students.
Coming up, aging trees and carbon offsets. More after this.
Thanks for tuning in to The Frequency, and thanks to VITA for their support. VITA, celebrating 50 years of helping Vermont businesses grow and thrive. From agriculture to energy, startups to established companies, find solutions that fit your business. Visit veda.org to start your next chapter.
Carbon offset markets pay landowners for storing carbon by letting their trees grow old. They're increasingly popular with companies that pledge to go carbon neutral. In recent years, some scientists have raised concerns about whether these markets actually cut emissions. There's also the question of whether or not managing forests to let trees get older will make them more resilient to climate change. Now, a new program aims to fix some of those problems. Our colleague Abigail Giles reports.
Jackie Hill Farm sits high up in the Green Mountains, in the shadow of Shrewsbury Peak. It's at the end of a long, quiet dirt road. Tim Stout's family has owned the 175-acre farm since the 1940s.
So this little knoll here is Jackie Hill, where the name of our farm comes from. And then this is Little Killington. Right there.
Stout is one of the first landowners to enroll his property in a new program from the Nature Conservancy and American Forest Foundation. It's called the Family Forest Carbon Program. The idea is to pay small landowners to manage their forests for climate resilience, as well as for carbon sequestration. This appealed to Stout, who wants to leave this forest in good shape for his young grandkids and for the planet. We're headed to a knoll below his sugar bush, where some thinning just took place.
Up through here, how they've opened up the canopy quite a bit, and they've taken a lot of trees down, but there's still, there are large canopies above that will grow out further, and then there's a lot of trees that will, in the understory, that will grow up to fill in this gap.
Now, those trees that were cut will release carbon into the atmosphere. But the hope is that the older ones will grow bigger and live longer. It's one of two management options landowners can choose from. The other is to just let trees grow old. Forests store carbon as they grow, not just in the trees, but in the soil. Scientists agree one of the best things we can do to fight climate change right now is to keep our forests as forests. Proponents of carbon markets say they help do just that. But before you can enroll land in a carbon market, you have to know what's on it, what you're starting with. And often, the cost of finding out is too high for small forest owners. In Vermont, about 80% of our forests are family-owned. And just managing for carbon, it doesn't mean you'll have a forest that can stand up to climate change. That's where the Nature Conservancy and the American Forest Foundation wanted to do things differently. They worked with scientists and foresters to develop practices that store enough carbon to let landowners get paid and prepare their forests for climate change.
We fund the program with carbon credits, but we pay landowners for climate-smart forestry.
That's Richard Campbell, a forester with the American Forest Foundation, who helped design the program. With the Family Forest Carbon Program, landowners commit to a 20-year contract instead of the usual 50- or 100-year agreement. The nonprofits pay for a management plan. And when it comes to measuring how well that plan works to store new carbon on the property, the groups say they've designed a process that's more accurate than what other companies are using. They say that's important, because historically, there have been some challenges with proving that what's happening in a forest is actually translating to less carbon in the atmosphere. And that math matters, because big polluting companies, they're buying these carbon offset credits and telling the public that those credits are canceling out their emissions.
Right, we can very easily measure emissions from fossil fuel combustion pretty like accurately. Sort of get that. It's very hard to measure carbon in the woods and especially changes in carbon over time.
Ali Kasiba is the extension forester for the University of Vermont and was previously Vermont State Climate Forester. She says not all carbon credits are created equally. Many carbon offset markets are largely unregulated by governments. In those markets, there is no uniform way to measure how much carbon is being taken out of the atmosphere and stored in a forest. And she says some firms selling credits aren't forthcoming about how they do their math. In contrast, Kasiba says the American Forest Foundation and Nature Conservancy have been really transparent. They're having their process vetted by a third party. The organizations also say they'll only sell credits to buyers who can prove they aren't using them to greenwash polluting activities elsewhere. That's not common practice. But because they're nonprofits, they say they can afford to make less money or even take a loss by being choosy. Still, Kasiba says,
that trading of the carbon that's stored or sequestered in the forest for actual emissions made elsewhere. I think that's, for me, that's my biggest concern about these programs.
Mark Ashton is the director of Yale Forests and a professor of silviculture and forest ecology at Yale. He agrees the science is fuzzy at best around how to count the carbon saved by keeping trees in forests. And he shares Kasiba's concerns about carbon offsets and environmental justice. Besides, Ashton says, we don't really know what climate change is going to throw at New England forests. He says we'd be wise to manage them the way you might a stock portfolio in an uncertain market.
So you don't manage for predictability, you manage for unpredictability.
Ashton says the Family Forest Carbon Program is a step in the right direction. Jim Shallow with the Nature Conservancy in Vermont says what we really need is for big polluters to cut their emissions. But in the meantime, he says carbon offsets done right can be a great tool.
Right now, we still are a carbon dependent economy, and we just don't have the technologies to make everything carbon neutral. So at this point in the game, we need to rely on nature to help us get to that neutrality.
This program is open now to landowners with at least 30 acres in Western Massachusetts, Eastern New York, and Vermont. If it goes well, the nonprofits would like to expand it. They say in the next couple of critical decades, we need all solutions on the table. For Vermont Public, I'm Abigail Giles.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Marlon Hyde and Connor Cyrus. And for this Wildlife Wednesday, Ezra from Jericho sent us this recording of two osprey hollering back and forth with some gentle ocean waves recorded on a recent trip to Maine.
Thank you, Ezra. And as always, if you have wildlife sounds you'd like to share with us, you can send them to thefrequency@vermontpublic.org. Our executive producer is Mark Davis, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. Talk to you tomorrow.
How are we supposed to fix what we don't talk about? Welcome to Homegoings, a Vermont Public podcast that encourages fearless conversations about art and race.
It's like an extended family, and especially around homegoing time.
Join us for Homegoings, wherever you get your podcasts. We're a proud member of the NPR network.